Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Hey, I'm the Snake Boot Man.
Hey, I'm the non-Snake Boot Man.
And I'm scared of snakes.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, everybody? Guess what? It is December, and it's like 98 outside. 98 degrees. Pretty good band, I think, from back in the 90s.
I thought you said, I need to grease.
I do. I need to grease. I actually have greased myself already today. I shot a bunch of pigs at my property here a while back and made some smoked meat, and it was delicious, but it is a little bit on the greasy side. Somewhat, not like nasty greasy.
It's okay. That's all right. It's pretty good still.
Yeah, but it was... Definitely barbecue, you know, where you're wiping yourself down a little bit, but it was good. I had some more of that for lunch today, so I'm just a big pig-fed man, if you know what I mean.
Pig-fed.
Eric and I just got back from Oklahoma on a little hunt, a little adventure on some public land stuff up there. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk some about that today. Tyler has a hunt fixing to happen that's going to be kind of wild. Probably mentioned, I'm sure, to some extent. And then we want to do a little bit of a retrospective review of the rut.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. You like that?
There's lots of air rays in there.
That's right, dude. So that's what we're going to talk about majorly on the podcast today. Kind of some stuff we learned because we've talked a lot about this kind of on road trips and stuff post our Kansas trip, and we just really got to see the rut unfold in a different way than I ever really have. So it was pretty cool. I think we should cover that some. But the culmination of said rut just aired on the YouTube channel this week, okay? Tyler Jones shot possibly the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life from the ground on public.
I'm texting a guy about it right now.
Are you really? Yep. Who is it?
Jason Redd.
Jason Redd.
I've had him on the podcast.
That's before. Right. He's good. He's a good interview.
Yep.
He likes to talk about stuff, man.
Yep.
That's good. So, guys, if you haven't watched that, it's about one of the coolest things you'll see, you know.
It's the coolest thing I've seen.
Especially, like, if your wife hasn't given birth yet or something like that, like, it's definitely the coolest thing you've seen. It is pretty awesome. You get to see an arrow in flight for a long ways. Eric laid it down on the footage on that deal. It was pretty cool. You must have had it like an F-13 or something, because that arrow seemed like it was in focus for a long way.
Well, it was a pretty sunny day, so it might have been like F-22.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, way up there.
Which is... pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good when you can do that.
I know, yeah. For as far as documenting wildlife, it works pretty good.
It's hard to miss the focus, right?
I know.
But he was on, dead on, man.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It looks good. You were dead on, too. Smoked him.
I was, man.
Yeah.
That's what, actually, Jason was just texting me about. He was saying, you know, he didn't know if the with that wind, if it would hit true, he said it must have been a straight headwind. I was like, straight on, dude.
Mm.
So,
you know, that's interesting. I've thought a lot about that, and I would like to see how it plays out. I think that according to physics, when you're shooting with a straight headwind or a straight tailwind, that should also affect your arrow flight. But I don't think it's enough to make that much of a difference when it comes to real-world scenarios with archery.
How many miles per hour is a arrow moving?
So 300, no, sorry. That would be the arrows that we used to shoot when we shot light arrows. Now we shoot vectors that are heavy and hard-hitting. So let's just say an average of
5,260 feet in a mile, right?
Uh-huh. So 250 per second.
So 5,260 divided by 260, right, about what we're shooting?
I'm shooting 250. Yeah, I don't know what you're shooting.
Say 250. That's 21.4 seconds to go a mile, correct?
That's a, yeah. You got the calculator out, so I believe you.
It says 21.04.
That's fast.
Seconds to go a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Typically in a car, if you're going 60, you're going 60 seconds in a mile in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's going 150 miles an hour, right?
I believe that. Quite a bit faster than baseball.
So if you add a 20-mile-an-hour headwind or tailwind, it's not doing just a ton to it, probably.
That and friction matters a whole bunch in that, too.
Yeah.
You know, in that side of stuff. However, I feel as if on an archery shot with a headwind, you should hit higher. And on a tailwind, you should hit lower.
Really? I feel like a headwind, you should hit lower.
I think on a headwind, you're going to get some lift on the upper arc of your arrow.
What about on the lower on a 50-yard shot?
It should just drop in. I don't think that you're going to have near as much because it's slowing down a little bit out there, too. I don't think the headwind's going to push you down as much as it would lift you up. I don't know. But I think it's going to be like...
My arrow was definitely angled down when it came into that deer.
You want to know what your favorite phrase is and what definitely applies in this situation? Can't shoot the difference.
Yep.
Hey, we need to make a t-shirt of that.
We do.
That would be a good one.
Man, y'all stop. Don't get that idea
going.
Yeah,
if I see one out there, ooh, you better believe.
I'm going to cut you.
We're dropping elbows.
We're going to cut you.
That's right. So, if you haven't watched that hunt, it is just one of the coolest things. Like I've said a couple times, I need to figure out a better way of expressing myself.
It's hard, man.
It is.
There's some that are just overused, and a lot of them, like cool, awesome, amazing, those mm-hmm. are overused, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like unbelievable is pretty highly used, but, you know, incredible a little less, but still often. It's like, man, there's got to be some words that I just don't know.
I like to say rad.
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 Back from the Ninja Turtle days.
I can see you do that. Yeah. Pretty rad guy.
I got a rad bod going on right now.
I did after last night. For sure. What about extemporaneous?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Do y'all know what extemporaneous means?
No.
I feel as if it means spur of the moment.
You know what's a word I like?
What's that?
Incredulous.
Incredulous just means like you're telling on yourself, right? Like the evidence is there.
It's a negative context word,
yeah.
But it sounds like a positive, optimistic word.
Oh, how incredulous.
Oh, that was an incredulous shot, man. Incredulous shot.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It's an incredulous video, man.
Can we just start using it and how many people would know?
Nobody's going to know.
Right? That's right. There'll be a link to that in the description if you haven't watched. Please go do that. Leave us a comment if you don't mind. It always helps us and helps you support what we're doing if you like us. Yeah. If you don't like us, I don't know why you're listening because, man, that's just pretty...
Somebody did that recently. Somebody listened to us that didn't like us recently because I got a review that was real nice.
On podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I think I saw that one.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, they were hating.
I haven't looked at podcast reviews in a long time.
When they listened, they did not think it was an incredulous podcast.
If you are listening and you want to leave us a review on podcast, do that.
Yeah,
that would be cool. That would be nice.
Yeah. That would be a nice thing you can do.
So that's kind of how the rut wrapped for us. In a sense, I went and hunted kind of like that. It depends on what you call a rut, right?
I would think November, you know? That's kind of why I was thinking we'd do this podcast is that November is going to have rut action throughout.
Yeah, we hunted a lot in November.
Mm-hmm.
One of our favorite contemporaries is Old Midwest Whitetail, you know, and they do Chasing November, which in the same sense, Chasing November covers from like September 1 to old December 31. So I guess it's pretty loose on what these terms mean. But today we're going to talk about what we saw in the rut, and that's going to be like November 1 on. For we were in different parts of the country, but we still saw some pretty broad-reaching concepts, I would say, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the only way I can think to start this is to just talk about, you know, calendar dates,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We, I guess, truly November 2 was our first hunt day, I think,
November
right?
One. Not yet.
Did we hunt on the first?
Yeah.
I don't remember hunting on the first.
Yeah, we hunted the first the evening of the first.
Blue Jean Davy.
That's
the first. So, I'm sure we can just kind of extend this into conversation, but I'll just start this and say that on November 1, I didn't hardly see much rut activity. Eric was with me. Did you remember seeing anything?
The only thing I can remember is, which wasn't really rut action, I guess, but there was some bucks on the skyline following doe that first night. Do you remember that?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That guy was following a couple does around, but it wasn't aggressive. He was just kind of
walking.
The morning of the first, Eric and I were driving around and saw a buck real close to the road that was following does.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
The first couple of days of November, I was seeing a ton of cruising.
Yeah.
Because we had some pretty decent weather, and then it kind of warmed up a little bit, I think, a little bit after the first couple of days.
We were hunting different stuff than you were.
You know,
same part of the country, but just definitely different type habitat.
Yeah.
And we didn't see a bunch of cruising. We saw, morning of day two, we saw the big deer, and that pretty much consumed us from there. We saw a lot of tending, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting to me. And I wonder if that's something that happens more in more wooded stuff and we just don't see it.
Yeah.
Because that was a big mature buck that pretty much had a harem of 6 to 9 does. And he was with them almost every day, not being super overly ruddy or anything, but pretty much just knowing he was the king and was just establishing, I'm going to breed as many of these girls when they come into heat. That I can before I go and run and do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's unique to that deer. I would assume that there are a lot of things that are unique to particular bucks.
Yeah.
Right?
I would think dominant bucks, though, big dominant bucks act like that a lot of times. That happens for them, right?
Yeah.
A 2-year-old doesn't get to tend a group of 6 does very often. He may breed a doe, but like, or several does during the rut, but I don't feel like he gets to tend 6 does for 5 days straight. You know what I mean?
I think that we saw a little bit of that as the week progressed, probably. I don't know what days, you know, it all gets kind of mixed up, but like between November 2nd through the 5th, we would see a 2 or 3-year-old with some does, like a small family group, like a mama, a younger doe, and a fawn or something. Mm. And he'd be watching them. You know, like on him. And I think he knew that I've got these girls for 12 hours or something like that, you know, because sooner or later I'm about to get whooped and get put on the road.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I think that definitely happens. I think a lot of guys have this lockdown thing, which happened while we were up there. Not that it happened, but that we saw a ton of people in the country talking about lockdown right at the end when we were there, and when we were in Colorado, we were hearing a lot of people talk about this lockdown phase that they were seeing. And I think what ends up happening more than anything is like dudes have their properties that they hunt, and they have these truck camera pictures of a couple of 4 and 5-year-old bucks, and then all these other like 2 and 3-year-olds, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, these 4 and 5-year-olds disappear, and these guys think, oh man, it's lockdown, you know? And I think more than anything, it is a sense of lockdown, right? But like the buck that you've been following and you want to shoot is with 6 does and he's 300 yards away and he ain't going, you know, through where he's been going for the last month or whatever, because he's with those 6 does. It's not that he's with 1 doe locked down and breeding her actively, but he's waiting on these 6 does to come in. He knows it's right on the brink and it's about to happen, but he's protecting that harem, essentially, from some other big five-year-old from moving in or whatever.
I think that concept of lockdown that you're talking about, that a lot of the general hunting dudes out there are talking about, only happens for like 6 to 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he finds her that night, follows her, and beds with her that day. The buck I shot was on that lockdown,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a one diurnal period, like daytime, where he's going to stick with her all day and try to breed her. And then that night, new stuff happens.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. Yeah. It's like every night, I don't know. I don't feel, and I'm not a biologist here, and I don't know all the reports and all that on how this actually looks with radio collar, research and stuff. But like, I feel that most of the time that is what happens. Like every night there's a breakout in the open country, a rut fest where everybody just breaks out in open. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like we went to look for a deer the other night that we haven't really talked about getting shot on the podcast or anything, but a friend of ours,
yeah,
that shot a deer. We went to help out, and we saw as soon as we were making a bunch of noise, and as soon as we hopped into the woods, there was two does at like 50, 60 yards, or two deer, and I was like, that we'd been making a bunch of noise, and they're just standing there. They got no problem with mm-hmm. us. But it's dark mm-hmm. in the daylight. Like we could obviously see them. They could see us in the daylight, and they wouldn't be anywhere around, you mm-hmm. know? So it's just, I don't know. Like the amount of land on the landscape is completely and fully open pretty much to deer at night. Whereas there are only certain spots they want to be in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so like everything just busts loose, and deer travel and move at night and find new does and stuff.
And you think about this, if you live in destination food source country, which can be anywhere pretty much, except for like huge river bottoms, you know, but like you say you live in northern Missouri and there's one field that the beans are still in, right? There's ridges from all directions leading up to that bean field. Well, everybody goes up there that night and has a huge hodgepodge, and then that buck might have bedded on, you know, your property on the south last night, and he's two properties to the north in a different ridge system because that's where the does went that night.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he's technically on lockdown. It's not that he's 200 yards from you but just not moving. It's just that he went with those a different direction, is locked on them more than locked down.
Mm-hmm.
And the deer you killed was in a similar sense, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, 3 days before we saw that deer, or Eric saw that deer in a different spot,
mm-hmm.
but that night he had found ladies and was sticking with them hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's here's another thing, is if you watch the video,
mm-hmm.
we see three does on a road, and I'm not sure that those weren't the same does that he was with that morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was with them though when they crossed the road in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he was with them or not. Like, because we never saw him. We just saw three does go across the road, just kind of galloping real slow, you know. Mm-hmm. But it just, that's kind of the point, is like, these does are up near the road, and I'm not sure if the buck's with them or not. And this is not long before daylight, you know. Mm-hmm. And at some point, like, that buck was able to find those does in the dark and be like, all right, it's getting light, like, I'm going to try this. You know what I mean? I'm just going to just lock these suckers down away from everybody else and see if I can see what mm-hmm. happens.
That's right. He's going to see what happens for sure. Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like where we hunt, that whole concept of I'm going to stick with this girl can happen from November 1 on.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a peak breeding only type thing, mm-hmm. right? In fact, I don't know how breeding dates line up with some of the more Western stuff in like the Midwest, right? But like, I know that like Ohio, for sure, it's like November 7th through 14th, right? It's peak breeding, mm-hmm. right? And so people try to hunt November 1st through the 10th, assuming that there's a lockdown period. And Bill Winky, not to send y'all to Midwest Whitetail or whatever too much, right? But, you know, we respect what they do, especially, you know, Bill, just so smart on whitetail. I mean, that guy is just a full-fledged believer in, like, oh, it's November 13th. It's over until the late season, you know? Like, it's just the way he looks at it, you know? And he just knows that there is a lockdown period. And I don't know. You know, you start moving out more, like, into, you know, say, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you can see better?
Yeah.
That things look different?
Yeah, I've wondered that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know. Because I feel like I can learn something out there about how to hunt deer in certain stages of the rut or dates of the year or whatever that I do feel like could apply in the woods, other places. But here's the deal is like, you know, we're from Texas, so the Midwest is far, mm-hmm. and the upper Midwest is even farther, mm-hmm. you know, and the East is far. So, I don't really have like a ton of November experience. I don't have any in Ohio. I hunted October 23rd in Illinois 1 year and killed a deer.
Mm-hmm.
I hunted for 2 hours and one in this, in the first time in the state and killed a deer, a giant, you know, and like, so I can't, like, I don't have any experience there, but 2 hours in October. So, like, what
did you give yourself a nickname
like?
After that?
Mr. October.
Mr. Efficiency.
Who was that? Reggie.
Reggie Jackson.
Jackson, Mr. October, right?
Yep.
That's right. A baseball thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get out of here, bro. Don't try to get up on us.
I don't know much. I don't know.
I don't know much about history. Don't know much about biology.
That's the, you want to talk about a sport I don't know much about. I like it. It's kind of fun, but yeah. I don't know when the playoffs are. I just know I'm glad that the Cards didn't make playoffs this year, so Eric was with us the whole time.
They actually made it.
Oh.
But
they had to make a play in to make the playoffs, and they didn't play in.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't make it far. I got beat by the Blue Jays.
The birds. When you say birds on the pond, do you mean the Blue Jays or do you mean the Cardinals?
It's so. What is it? Yeah, birds on the pond means bases loaded in baseball terms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
It's okay. Ducks on the pond. That's then I just changed it to birds on the pond.
Because y'all are birds.
Yeah.
How many birds are there in the baseball world? A bunch, huh?
Orioles, Blue Jays, Cardinals,
Pelicans.
Pelicans are not one. I'm trying to think if there's any other.
Penguins.
Nah.
What?
That's hockey.
Astros. Those are extinct birds, I think, right?
Yeah. Penguins aren't a baseball team?
That's hockey.
Oh. Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yep.
Pelicans are basketball.
Yeah.
Yep.
Seahawks.
Seahawks. That's football.
I don't watch NFL. No. Nope.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Is that it?
Oh, the Angels. They're kind of like birds.
Kind of like birds. Depends on which type, right? Have you seen these memes about the realistic Christmas tree angel stuff?
The one you posted
today. Did I post it? Yeah. It's pretty funny. I love it.
It is funny. yeah. So, anyway. Rut recap.
So, we might have gotten too far into lockdown stuff. You have any other thoughts?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just kind of generally got a few thoughts. I can't say that I'm like super, at this point, remembering all the details of everything I was seeing. But I do know on that trip, I was there in early November. You were there eight or nine days. I was there 11 days. And we got to see like the rut change, you know. And I think it was really cool, you know. We went from there being a lot of cruising, some tending to like, and we saw it kind of where we almost saw like bucks get more like hostile. Almost,
oh, you know, absolutely.
What I mean? Like, yeah, they were like getting very, like frustrated almost with does and bucks, you know. It's like they're frustrated because it's not quite where it needs to be for breeding, and they're frustrated because they're at the highest testosterone level, so they're mad at other bucks, you know. You guys witnessed like an epic fight between two monster bucks, and we got the footage of it. I don't think we put a whole lot in videos yet, but there's a little bit, I think, maybe.
So I think that that was one of the takeaways for me on that concept, was how short of amount of time it took to go from chill to rage and then kind of mellow out almost. I feel like by the time I shot my deer, which was the eighth, thank you. it was like okay, we're kind of settled into this rut thing. You know, we're going to do this rut thing, but, you know, it's not going to be, like, haywire. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there was, like, November 2nd, you and I chased that buck on the ground, and he was, like, spooky, mm-hmm. right? Like, he was like, I ain't into this. I'm out of here. And mm-hmm. he was the boss hog, right?
Dude, and he should have come right to our decoy.
Yeah. And then didn't. On November 5th, we saw him battling it out to the death against another giant buck.
Yeah.
So within 3 days, like, things went to moving, mm-hmm. you know, things went to pumping, and he was yeah. ready to rock and roll.
Which, I mean, not to cut you off, I guess. The moral of what you're kind of saying is, like, or at least to me, the lesson I'm trying to think about is, like, in every little stage, with every little, like, attitude of deer,
mm-hmm.
there are ways to kill them that are different than other ways, you know? So, like, mm-hmm. I guess... being very observant while you're out there as to what deer are doing is helpful. Also observing through trail cameras and stuff, which is one, like, that's one good reason to have Moultrie Mobile mm-hmm. is you can see day to day, minute to minute, up to the minute, what the behaviors of deer are, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can see, oh, well, those two deer are like, there's two decent bucks right there at the trail camera that are, you know, fluffed up, mm-hmm. you know, they're ready to fight now.
Yeah.
Like, so maybe I can get out there and rattle, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And, it can kind of, you know, using the mobile app, that Moultrie has is like a good, way to just keep tabs on like what tactics you can use during the rut.
You know what I like doing with that too, is that we leave them set to like upload once or twice a day for battery purposes. But you get a camera that's hot or like a deer that you're on, then you can swap that thing without ever having to go to your camera on the app to,
mm-hmm.
you know, to instant upload,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if you want to learn something in a 24-hour period, it's a way to roll.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I used it to kill pigs the other day, kind of same kind of thing, yeah. you know, like, oh, they're there, better go out there and shoot them, yeah. you know, and it's pretty handy.
It is handy.
I think that really one of the points I was making though is that, what we think of is like how to kill a deer in the rut is actually a pretty hard thing to hit. Like that time period, it's pretty hard to hit.
Mm.
You know, like the whole like, oh, I'm gonna rattle in a 17-year-old buck and snort wheeze him to 15 yards. Like, dude, that doesn't happen. Like he might only be in that mentality for like 6 hours the whole year.
Mm.
You know, like they ain't just out there looking for fights all the time. And right. there might be one that's that way. That one that slobbered up. You know, looked like a big old muscled up 4-year-old that Eric and I rattled in. He was kind of that way. He was mm. a fighter. He's already broke off on November 6th or whatever it was, you know. But like, at the same time, you know, you can go up there and see giant bucks that don't have any broken tines. And that usually means to me, like, they aren't fighting a whole
yeah,
lot, you know.
Well, that's what I ran into with that 11 point I was chasing
mm-hmm.
was, so I had seen him a couple times on that trip. And I can't remember exactly when, but I do know the 10th. The day of the 10th was the day that we had the issue where we rattled him in along with another 10 point that was real nice. And if you've watched the video, Eric is filming the 10 point, has no clue the 11 point's there. I am calling to and working this 11 point, have no clue that the 10 point is there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like probably 60 yards from each other. And we didn't know either one of them was there. And I thought, when he's filming this deer, I'm thinking he's filming this 11 point. And he's thinking that I'm calling to the deer he's filming, which is a 10 point. It was just disastrous. But what I was kind of getting to is that, like, even the individual personalities of deer really play a part in how you approach, like, different rut tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And so this 11 point, I've never seen him with a broken tine. We've had pictures of him the last several years. Never seen him with a broken tine. He comes into this rattling sequence with a 10-point pushing him out of, I mean, just...
That's a younger deer.
Yeah, I would assume.
Younger than him.
I would assume, yeah. Younger deer, yeah. And he's like, and smaller, antler-wise, for sure. And I'm watching this 11-point, like, act like, I mean, he's got his tail kind of tucked, and he's getting out of there, kind of. You know, he's not running, but he's walking fast. And now that I've seen the footage of the 10-point, like, I can tell he's walking this deer out of the way, you know, and he was probably going to end up pushing him out of the way and then coming on up to us. And so, like, that was a deal that I noticed as well, was like, man, this deer could be really hard to kill because he is just not going to come running into antlers.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you remember the 8-point with the broke G3s that I got real good footage of? Mm-hmm. It's just a toad body.
Mm-hmm.
That deer, I could have probably made a, you know, burp and he would have come in. You know what I mean? Like he was amped up. I saw him cruising a couple of times. And one morning I saw him cruising. He was running. There was no does around at all.
Just running to cruise.
He was literally jogging. He would jog for like 20 yards and then he would just walk real fast. And I would hear him grunting and then he would just take off running again.
Mm-hmm.
There's no does around.
Just hype.
Dude. And that's like, that's, you know, you guys know the dude out there that like just gets into bar fights all the time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like that's, I knew those guys in college and, you know, you're just like, man, I don't really feel like having this guy's back again. You know what I mean?
It's also, make an analogy here, it's not a very sustainable way of life either for a deer or a guy.
When that's,
like, you're going to crash and burn one way or another. Like, that deer is the one that you go when he's like 100 yards and shoot him.
And that's, and so, like, the, you know, they say that, well, they're smart. That's why he's so old. Well, that, I don't know if you say smartness or whatever, but like, him being a smart deer isn't necessarily that he's evaded and he's played cat and mouse with all these hunters, mm-hmm. right? And he's figured out like he can do this little loop through all these hunters that are hunting, you know?
Exactly.
It's more, it literally goes into every part of his life. It's not just the hunting season, but it's the rut season.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't fight every deer because he knows that he stands a chance to die every time he fights, mm-hmm. right?
Like humans, they're smarter and dumber humans.
Yeah.
They're smarter and dumber deer, too.
Yeah. I'm apparently the dumbest one here because I don't have the element shirt on, but
sorry.
I'm the only one without one. But that, it's the truth, man. Like, they're not everybody's Elon Musk, you know?
That's right.
Sitting there creating some kind of, you know, underground railroad system.
Time's man of the year. Did you see that?
Really?
I saw that.
Which sounds cool until you realize who was man of the year last year. Y'all just look that one up.
Mr. Joe?
Man of the Year went to two different people. They split it.
Oh, that's a good way.
Joe and his running mate.
Oh.
So you're like, all right, way to go, Elon. That's,
well,
devalued it for
wasn't
you.
Harriet Tubman, wasn't she going to be on a dollar or something at some point?
I think so. Is she?
I was just thinking about the Underground Railroad that Elon Musk was creating.
Is he doing that?
No, well, I've heard. You know, he likes to say stuff. And just kind of like test the waters and see what everybody thinks, you know. He gets on Twitter.
You're not on Twitter, but Eric, do you follow Elon?
I don't think I follow him, but I see a lot of his tweets.
Oh, dude, I follow Elon. He is a good Twitter follow
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Because here a while back, somebody was like, if Elon Musk would just give 1/10 of his wealth to solve world hunger. And Elon, he apparently pays attention to his mentions, which most famous people don't, you know. He was like, okay. Tell me how. I'll do it right now. Called bluff, and then it was crickets. Crickets.
Well, let me see.
Well, actually, the logistics behind this.
333% repeating, of course.
That's right. But yeah, and there's going to be a Elon Musk deer out there running around that figures out a way to, you know, avoid arrows. Like the deer I shot at in Texas in 2016, he's Elon, you know, just can jump 26 inches or whatever.
2016?
It was 16?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said 2017.
I don't know. I think I said 16.
Scar.
Yeah, Scar.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there's going to be all kinds of deer out there. And then, I think it's yours.
Yeah, it's mine. I don't want it.
Good. Tyler accuses me of stealing his orange hats all the time. But
that's just a funny thing.
That's right. It's a publicly improvised right there, dude. Yeah,
it's socialism, man.
That's it.
All our hats are all our hats.
They pretty much are.
All of our land
we
is
have all
our
the
land.
Same stuff. So
yeah,
like when somebody sends us something, they send us two of everything. So it's like, well, is this
Element
yours?
Outfit?
That's right, Element Outfit. That's funny. Okay, so that's what we saw like in a first road trip.
Yeah,
I got a question.
Okay,
the day we saw the two big bucks fighting,
mm-hmm.
and he came running by us, you know, shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
You had told,
I think I'll throw up.
You told Tyler that night, and you kind of referred this to a few times. You said he was in zombie mode.
Mm.
Do you think that's like one of the best times to try to kill these kinds of bucks?
I think that I'm glad you bring that up because that deer in particular, the way to kill him was ambush style. was to be in a spot where he's going to walk by. We called at him a couple times, you know, in different situations, and he never gave a flip. Mm-hmm. But the way we were close to him was an ambush, and he was zombie mode, meaning he was chasing does. I don't know why that happened the way it did. We've covered this on the podcast, and you've seen the back of my head in video where these deer just come galloping by at 20 yards, and the does are running, and he's running behind them. I don't think he's pushing them that hard, but I think they were just all running, and the does couldn't stop running because he was behind them, mm-hmm. and he couldn't stop running because they were in front of him. So it wasn't like a – he was just – I just had to be within 60 yards of him. Mm-hmm. And the way to kill that buck was by far ambush style. Mm-hmm. And we were there. It just didn't quite work out, right? Oh. But –
That's a mentality that happens at some point during the rut a lot too, I feel like, for deer. Like, mm-hmm. Our buddy Dan the other day had a buck, and I think he's had multiple bucks recently do this, but you guys had this happen in Oklahoma maybe too, but like just not even look at a grunt call. Just like he had a deer, I think he said he had him at full draw, and he's like, it just blows my mind how a mature buck can just completely ignore a grunt call,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I mean, if he had him at 40, surely he's grunting him at 60 or 80, and that deer should be able to hear him, right? So it's like, and then, you know, November 29th, 2018, maybe, you and I were at Johnson, and we grunted in two bucks through the fog at like 200 yards.
I guess I didn't realize that was that late in November.
Yeah. And so,
they loved it. They were like, I hear a deer, we're going to go there.
Yeah.
From 200 plus yards away.
So how do you know what, like, is that just like, I'm just going to, is there a stage of the rut where that is, or is that just like a stage of the particular deer's rut where he gets to zombie status and won't listen to things or whatever?
I don't know.
It's like, you always talk about Chris B's buck from last year being a zombie, you know?
He says that. Yeah. Chris says he was in zombie mode, and I think that, and he killed it ambush style.
Yeah.
He just walked by him.
Right.
I think that some bucks are just going to answer to it. And some aren't. Yeah, some bucks. but I think that it's a good situation in the sense that you can't do a lot of harm, you know?
Yeah.
If he doesn't respond to the grunt, no worse for the wise, right? Mm-hmm. So he's just you didn't kill him.
Yeah.
I do think that if a deer's in range, I'm going to do everything to stop him, not just grunt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you have shot windows, then it's kind of tough. But the javelina call will come out if need be.
Yeah.
I promise you, every animal in the world will stop whenever that happens.
I will bend over in pain.
It is a sound that they don't like. It's like a loud screech owl or something, you know. But
that's what you should have done, which, of course, hindsight's 20/20, as they say. But you should have done that on that hunt last year where you had those two bucks chasing that doe at noon
come by. I think they would have tried to stop, but I don't think they could have stopped. It's fast.
They were fast.
Should have done a Gila elk, so I should have done whenever he turned out.
Yeah. But you go from like, it's a split second decision where mm-hmm. you're like, up until that point, I've been like as quiet as I possibly can be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to change that. And, divulge would be to give out more information.
Yeah.
Deviate too far. On the Gila hunt, I did have a shot opportunity at 40 something yards at that elk because I played it cool.
Yeah.
I just used the wrong pin and shot over his back.
Yeah, that's true.
But it worked out.
Yeah.
So that's not a complete and total failure. Anyways, watch that video. Yeah, you probably already have about a quarter million have or something like that.
300, I believe.
Is it?
I believe it's over 300,000 now. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
I love it when 300,000 people get to see me do something dumb.
Dude, our two most highly viewed videos are both not the funnest videos that we've ever made.
Dude, what's funny to me, and I'm appreciative that this is how we come off, but we've, you know, people are sharing our videos and stuff on Facebook or whatever, or commenting on YouTube videos, and they're like, man, I love the Element guys. They're just, you know, just humble dudes. And I'm thinking, like, that's great. I really try to be humble, but it's also like, You know, sometimes humility is forced on you. I think that's really the problem here.
Like, I thought I was awesome until I messed up a Gila hunt.
That's right. That's right. No, thank y'all for the kind words for sure. But it is funny that humble comes out. You know, it's like, when you show everything and show how stupid you are sometimes, it's hard to not like, you either got to be humble or sound real cocky. Like, so anyways,
Anyway, kind of back to the whole zombie thing. I think it's to me, it seems a little more like it's a time of the rut when a certain deer acts a certain way. Now, granted, there is a time during November where the variables of moon probably and weather and things start to all line up, and then it busts loose for a few days, like it won't at any point else in November. And I think we had a weird rut. Like, our November was pretty warm. We had a couple of cool days when we first got to Kansas where I personally saw a ton of cruising, and then it kind of like chilled out. But like, once you get into the right days, it's still they may not have been cruising as much, but when they did come out, which would be like in the golden hours, you know, they were still like dumb. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there were times when I'd have like a 3-year-old buck come past me and go downwind. I pass him, you know, and he would go downwind of me, and he would just keep going through my wind. He would hit it, and you could see him smell it. Mm-hmm. But he would just go through my wind and continue to work through that for the next couple of minutes and just continue on downwind of me, you know, instead of like turning around and going, I'm not doing this. You know, I just caught wind. I'm going to go back where I know it's safe. Mm-hmm. He's like, the urge is too strong. I'm going to find those down this direction.
And there's a lot of urges on that too. The other day, Eric and I had does downwind, and we had a strong wind. So our scent was staying pretty high, but Jake, you could tell it could smell us, but there was only one direction for them to go to food, and they said, let's just walk through this and go.
Yeah.
You know, and
like, if we're going to eat tonight, this is where we have to do.
We have to do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what they did it. Yeah. I don't know. I think that, it's one of those deals where, also if it's been hot all day, but they do want to come out at night, sometimes they're even dumber because they're trying to make up for time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Colorado, and then we'll talk about y'all's Oklahoma trip. Was there anything at the end of November that we did in particular?
You and Eric.
Did we?
Y'all went to the Swamplands, didn't you? Didn't y'all leave on like the 29th or 30th or something like that?
I think it was December, wasn't it?
Was it?
For Colorado?
No, for Arkansas.
Oh, yeah, that was December, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I can't remember what we did in late November. We had Thanksgiving. I do know that.
Yeah. I hunted around the house a lot.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of good activity here, which we can probably talk about that too, because it's part of the kind of different ruts in different areas. Yeah. But Oklahoma, Colorado lines up pretty close.
Colorado was mid November. And so, and you were in Oklahoma during that time period, right?
We were in both out of state at the same time.
And so, for me, you know, it's pretty simple. Like, I don't have a ton to say about it, but Colorado, I killed on the 18th in Colorado, and to me, that is like the beginning of a really good stage of the rut, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places in the Midwest, people talk about peak breeding around maybe the, what is it? What's peak breeding in a lot of places?
I think it's the 10th through the 14th or something like that.
That's what I was thinking too. So, after that, those deer are starting to, like, there's only so many does left to be bred, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it starts to become a situation where bucks have to travel more often, right? So the 18th, deer were traveling.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, a couple of days, we were seeing some deer traveling, you know, bucks. Our, and so that was how we ended up killing.
Our buddy Rod White, it's his favorite time of year to
me
hunt.
Too. Thanksgiving is like the best time for me personally. Like, I've had some great hunts. I killed One-Eyed Jack on a Thanksgiving hunt. I just killed him late in the hunt on the 2nd of December. But I mean, that's the time period right in there. Like, whatever is a couple weeks after like peak reading or peak buck movement tends to be, you know, that November 7th, like a couple weeks later, is tends to be really good, or a week and a half later a lot of times. So that's kind of what I saw in Colorado, was just like a lot of cruising through bedding brush and stuff like that. I don't know if Oklahoma was kind of similar to you that first trip.
Yeah. So we had pretty bad moons for that, because we hunted the first – I hunted the first 9 days in November, right? Or eight or nine, whatever it was. Mm. And then came home for a week and then went to Oklahoma, which moons are on a 28-day cycle. And that means that if the moon was really perfect for early November, which it was, that the moon was really terrible for 2 weeks later, which it was. And it's the first time I ever saw the moon – like could visibly see on a day-to-day pattern that the moon really had an effect on deer, because the morning was about the only time that I would see deer. I mean, I didn't see a deer for 5 days straight in the evening, and I'm not the best hunter, guys, but I can usually find a deer to look at.
Yeah.
And I hunted four evenings. I came home on the fifth because I knew it was just, you know, dismal. I like the descriptive words.
Yeah.
So don't take a sound clip from that, please. The mornings were where it was at. It was like that was the only time you'd see deer, because they were still up and about because the moon was still hanging, you know, in the morning. But
also cooler.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is
we've had a warm November.
That's a thing you see in Texas a lot. I love mornings. Because of that, you know, you can have a 3 hour period where deer still feel good about moving around. Whereas, you know, if it's a hot day on November 7th, dude, it can be the last 15 minutes of light and still a little bit warm for deer wanting to be up and about. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember what the dates were, but say November 17th or something like that, I probably headed up there. And all mornings, and I would see bucks.
You were
cruising
up there earlier than that.
Was I?
I believe so. Because we came home, or we killed on the 18th. And came home pretty much that day, and you had already been up there several days, and it was one of those issues where we were struggling to help each other because we were so wrapped up in trying to get it done on our property.
Are you confusing me with another member of our party?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Because another friend of the program was up there.
Oh, okay.
And y'all were on the way home, and he might have been wanting a little bit of help.
Maybe.
But y'all were already too far past to...
Yeah.
It'd been like a serious backtrack or something like that.
Yeah, I got you.
I thought
he was up there when we were in Kansas.
I don't know.
I'm pretty
confusing.
Sure you were up there when we were in Colorado.
When were you in Colorado?
I mean, we killed on the 18th, and we'd been there 4 days or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. It's getting confusing.
I'm pretty sure.
I can remember the first 9 days of November pretty good, but after that, it starts getting real fuzzy. Zombie mode.
Zombie mode.
Yeah. It's truth, man. We need to make shirts for that, too. Man, we got some good merch ideas. that was my big takeaway, is how much the moon affected things when you weren't in the peak of the rut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. That's kind of my... mid-November thought. So the deer were definitely still it's like food sources mattered a little bit more than they did before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the other deal, is that like after the first frost, for the most part, food sources mattered to does all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it ain't like, oh, it's late season, they're on the food, you know, like, nah, man, does are always trying to find something to eat. So it's not something that you're waiting until late December. It's just how much the buck's going to be on those does when they're headed to the food, or how much are they going to be waiting.
Right.
You know, this past week, which this isn't a rut review as much, but kind of, Eric and I set some food source staging type stuff and saw does quite a bit and some tinies, but nothing mature because they don't have very much of a reason to get out there. I think that they know that they'll be out there that night. And if they happen on some old gal at midnight who's hot, then they can, you know, take advantage of the situation then. They don't really have to be as, prompt about things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you hunted around here during Thanksgiving, last part of November kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I spent about a week off of hunting, maybe like five, 6 days, maybe seven. And it was editing mostly Arkansas stuff. So I can't remember where all I hunted. I might have hunted like some public stuff around or something. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. And then I guess we did leave probably to go to Arkansas in late November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was like right after Thanksgiving.
Because we came back the 4th or 3rd or something like mm-hmm. that. So
I remember eating leftover Thanksgiving in the hotel.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, Thanksgiving yeah. noodles.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Audience members.
T-nudes.
Let's have a talk. If someone says, you know, Thanksgiving noodles, like, is that a specific dish that you recognize?
Send us a message.
Let us know. For one of the three of us, that is something very specific. The other two of us are like, I know what Thanksgiving is. I know what noodles are. However, I don't know how those two correlate.
So how did Texas, what did you see in late November in Texas? And this is East Texas, so this is a little different than a lot of other places in the country.
Yeah, so this is definitely kind of more that, the South type rut, mm-hmm. not South Texas. I had the best hunts that I've had around East Texas on my property this year.
You were seeing early December, you were seeing new bucks show up too.
I still have new bucks showing up.
That's cool.
In the middle of the night, but they're showing up. The other night on the camera, there was a deer that looked like a mature buck, but he had one of those spike sides kind of deals. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell if he's broke off or if it was, I don't know. But, still new bucks, right?
Yeah.
Saw some pretty good cruising action out of young deer. Never saw a mature deer cruising. That doesn't mean they don't. It's just, I'm hunting a pretty small property, so, you know, it's just the amount that deer cruise is pretty limited, so mm-hmm. am I going to see one? I don't know. But saw good deer on does, nearly shot a, like, mature big six-point by snort-wheezing him, mm-hmm. which he wouldn't pay attention to a grunt call, but snort-wheezing he came to twice.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty revelatory for me, was that deal.
You know the acronym for snort-wheezing?
Sneezing,
sizing,
size on.
Is there get your T-shirt.
There you go. So, for me in Arkansas, I can't tell you anything. it was terrible.
The word on the streets, Arkansas is pretty tough.
It was so hot, dude. It was so hot. I think that was the issue. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing: is I knew somebody that was up there prior and killed a really, really good buck. And was,
did you get to see that deer?
No, not in person.
Yeah.
But he said it was like buck roaring. Like, it was unbelievable.
That's scary.
Chasing does around and stuff. We didn't see none of that. None of that. And I think what happened is he had a little bit cooler weather.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to heat up late in his hunt.
Cool
early
weather's
in our hunt.
Everything man, in the South, man.
It is. And we were having 80-degree days, you know, sunshine. And I think that was a big part of it. I think there's a lot to learn too, and I think mm-hmm. we've already hashed all this out. But I guess I'm saying that weather affected that a big amount, and I think that
bigly
affected it. So I don't know. It's kind of like you said, like especially on evenings and stuff, man. This year just don't want to move until it's already
mm-hmm.
getting cooled down a little bit, I think.
And I was hunting private land here in Texas, and corn's king. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the way to kill a deer, and it ain't as easy. If you've never done it and you're thinking, well, you just wait on them to come out, it's not really how it works. Nope. You know, it is how it works for does. If you want to shoot a doe to eat, put a pile of corn out and you'll shoot a doe to eat.
Well, you can also go to a bean field if you're in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, you know, especially. And you know what else happens up there, you know, where they load those those bean freighters, you know? There's piles of beans right there. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's funny how that works, eh?
Yeah.
But get
your guns out in gun season and shoot one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Never mind. I can do some raging
you
right
like
now.
You like the D's, right? Digress.
That's right, dude. That's right. I digress for progress. So, but that was the thing is that if I had corn and didn't have hogs eating my corn, I would have deer. It's A plus B minus C equals D.
Perfect.
That's right. That's what we're looking for. D for deer is what we're going to call this one. Yep. That was pretty much the pivotal thing for me was being there around a corn pile. Mm. And I only saw a one-year-old buck eat corn the whole time, and I saw three or four different deer that I would shoot from the stand, and none of those deer ate a single kernel of corn while I was there. Yeah.
Interesting.
It is kind of interesting. But, that's the southern rut for you, and that's the thing, too, is that, like, I don't know, you never know. Like, tonight, there could be a deer out there chasing his head off in mid-December, you know?
Yeah.
Because the true biological justification for this is that we don't have to have as strict of peak breeding days because we have generally mild winters outside of last year, which I haven't seen that be too much of an impact, to tell you the truth. There's been a decent amount of fawns, I think, but an impact of the acorns for sure. Another podcast. Okay, so we don't have to have a really strict peak breeding dates because fawns that are born in late May can still survive the winters around here, you know? So you have does that are coming into heat January 1st, stuff like that. I mean, last year it was January 14th. I filmed a mature buck chase five does across my backyard going crazy. He wasn't just with them. He was chasing them, you know? And so it gives you a little bit of hope to just be able to still have some decent hunts. If you're not on public land.
I know y'all had some struggles in Oklahoma, and I know you late were able to feel like you guys were kind of starting to zone in that like in the most recent hunt here. And and so, you know, and that thanks to OnX, you know, as far as being able to get to new properties and stuff and trying to find, I mean, it took some days, right? But, like, you were able to find new properties because it's so easy just to hop on the app and look around and see, you know, property lines, property owners, and stuff like that. And I know that that's a big deal when we go out of state. But it doesn't always – it's not always, oh, man, we hopped on X, found a property, and went and killed a deer, you know? Like, sometimes it takes 5 days of scouring the maps to go and find
just something. Just because you find a property doesn't mean you got the property figured out. That was our tactic the last time we went to – Eric and I went to Oklahoma. Was I kind of planned the dates because of how much the moon affected the hunt previously. So I was like, okay, I'm going to make sure that the moon isn't a problem. I'm going to go back whenever it's a new moon. It's dark at night, right? Well, sure enough, the place that I thought we had figured out, they put 1 million cows on, and they just raged us. Yeah, it was tough.
That is tough. And one thing I really like about using OnX when you're out there trying to find a new place is that you, and I use this a lot, is you can quickly figure out how far, like, how far it is from the road to a good spot. I like the measuring tool a lot.
Yeah, line is still legit.
Because to me, like, if it's less than a half mile, then at that point you're talking about this spot needs to be an overlook spot. Otherwise, we're not getting away from pressure, you know. So I've been hunting a long ways this year. I'm going to try to find more overlook spots next year. But I've been using that tool a lot and going, man, this is a mile away, you know. This is a long ways in, but probably not many guys walking out there in 75-degree Arkansas heat, you know.
Probably a pretty good testament as to I'm actually going to talk to Tony Peterson tomorrow on a podcast. And one of the things he wanted to talk about was, like, preseason preparation stuff and stuff like that. Like, it's pretty invaluable to go through and have your spots kind of predetermined before you get in a pinch. Like, when you start planning an out-of-state hunt, like, it's – if you think that you have a bonus state that you might go to and you've got some toilet time or something, like, get on there and drop you some pins at some places that you think might work pretty good. Because, man, it is not a lot of fun to be driving somewhere and, like, at your gas stop on the way trying to figure out a place to hunt. You know, like, it's good to have, like, five or six spots that you know you can go to and feel pretty good about because you spent time a couple months ago scouting them out. And that's, I think, for me, was pretty much invaluable when it came to this last hunt because I'd looked at a bunch of stuff because I've been up there once and figured out, like, what looks good and then was able to take some time and go through and mark a bunch of stuff, and Eric and I were able to hop around and be like, oh, this will work. This looks good. Let's go try this. Still kind of confirmed it from truck scouting, too, you know?
Yeah,
but
for sure. How much time how much time did y'all spend on the ground in Oklahoma as opposed to in a cruiser saddle?
Half and half.
Yeah.
About half
something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. It's pretty nice.
But you were trying to get into a saddle as much as possible.
Yeah, because dadgummit, I'm tired of hunting on the ground. Like, I know it's the cool thing to do these days, but
you said
shoot
that a few
monkey.
Times up there. You're like, man, I really want to kill, just hang out and sit in a tree and shoot a deer.
Oh, it'd be so nice. Hopefully, I get to do it before the year's over.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining too much. I've killed two great bucks, and they've both been on the ground.
What I like about Chad from Cruiser Saddles is that he always says, you know, the saddle is just. It's a tool in the toolbox,
yeah.
You know, and he will, you know, Chad doesn't want you to go sit in a saddle when you could be killing a deer on the ground possibly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it gives us the freedom to go and do what we want, right? But, like, those saddles are comfy, and I like sitting in them, and it's a little bit easier to sit in a tree for a couple hours and just to walk 7.2 miles like y'all did that one
man,
day.
It's also easier to, if you're going to set up in an ambush situation, which is what you're doing when you're in a saddle, but on the ground you can be stalking or ambush, but it is way easier to actually make it happen from a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people don't get. I mean,
especially when you're self-filming.
I guess there's some stuff on the ground that's a little bit easier. You can kind of reposition and stuff like that, you know, maybe give yourself a few more opportunities. But that's, bless you.
Bless you.
Like, dude, Eric and I were in a tree, had deer all around us, and were able to, like, communicate, maybe use a few hand gestures, and, you know, move around, grab my bow and stuff like that. And you just can't do that from the ground that much.
I just like the advantage of being able to see just a little bit better. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get 9 foot up, man, you can see so much better than what you can on the ground.
Yeah,
you know,
it's absolutely.
Nice. And for learning purposes too, like even if you don't, you're not actually killing a deer or having deer close to you, like you can learn so much more when you can see a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Eric and I, the place that we hunted into the ground, was really neat because we could kind of see through a couple gaps. We could definitely see where the deer usually came from. So we were seeing deer at like 100 yards, but it's just a gap through some cedars. And then they would show up, but then they would be within 30 yards of us. And we were probably 15 foot or maybe a little higher. And at that angle, you're just above a deer's, unless they're like the look up type deer, and these really weren't. You're kind of above a deer's periphery, or it's not really peripheral, I guess, if it's above, right? But you're not in their danger zone anymore, you know? So, like, they're not that concerned about a big blob in a tree that's kind of right above them, you know? So that's another nice thing, too, is that if you can get deer within 30 yards and you're up in a tree, you can get away with so much more because they just don't see you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that you know, you can finish out there since you have some tags at some point.
Be nice.
But we're going to, Eric and I are going to go to some more tropical stuff.
Key deer.
Soon. So we're pretty excited about that. We're actually leaving tomorrow. We got some packing to do, so we're going to start wrapping this thing up. But I just wanted to thank you guys again for listening, hanging out with us, and those who have watched the video of or either of the videos of KC and I killing bucks and from the ground this year. We appreciate that, man. We are going to be at ATA. If anybody's listening and wants to, you know, hang out or whatever, we'll be running around at the show. So, as far as we know. So, if that is intriguing to anybody, come find us. And, you know, Eric and I are going to go try to give it a one more good go here in Texas. So
there's also just, we might have, you know, put birdie in people's ears already, but we're probably going to try to do a couple of meetup scouting session type things in state and out of state in the near months. So y'all just keep that in mind. You know, we haven't officially picked locations yet.
A couple we're thinking about are Houston, Nashville, Dallas, maybe Oklahoma City, you know, something like that.
Something.
Maybe want something out in the east or whatever. So just we're kind of looking at some stuff. If you have any ideas on a city that we should come to hang out in.
And actually make it a good idea, not like, oh, guys, you should come to Western West Virginia. You know, I've seen some stuff like, and I know what they're saying is like, hey, this would be a really cool place to come look at. And it's like,
yeah,
yeah, but it's going to be me, you, and the frogs out there. You know, like we want something where a bunch of us can all meet up.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. We can't go to Maine and expect anybody's going to come. You know,
have you ever actually met somebody from Maine?
No,
me neither. There's a guy that you know reached out the other day. Said he was from Maine.
Oh, I
was
really? Like,
that was cool. Yeah. But never have I met a person who like lived in Maine at one point in time or has family there and nothing.
Yeah, I don't think I've either. Yeah.
How about Delaware?
Mm-mm. Yeah, isn't that where Nick's from?
I don't know.
Nick,
Quad American?
No,
Pinizzato?
NDA. Yeah, and he's from Delaware.
I think he's from New Hampshire, New Jersey, or something.
I don't, those are I don't all know. So close. They I are. Think he killed a big buck in Delaware.
Same. It's like Northeast Texas and East Texas.
You I'm know. Pretty sure it's Delaware because he was like, "Yeah, man, I think this is like the next sleeper state." And I was like, "Bro, it's just too small to be a sleeper state." You know, like, there's just not a lot going on up there.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe you're right.
I don't know. Anyways, yeah. So be looking forward to that, guys. And look forward to some time with your family.
Yeah.
We've been spending some family time here lately. It's all right. Yep. You know, it's a good thing. And let me tell you something. They're a lot more happier when you spend time with them. Like when you're like, hey, I got to go to this state to go hunting. They're like, well, you haven't spent any time with me the whole time you've been here.
Yeah, well, so. I think your problems are a little different than some of the people listening. They probably don't travel nearly as much as you do.
Probably not. But, you know, like either way, it's all subjective. Like if your wife's not used to you leaving at all and then you're like, hey, I want to, you know, I'd like to go stay 3 hours from home and go hunting. Like, excuse me. You know.
But, they got deep voices.
That's right, dude. Pretty much.
Yeah. That girl sounds pretty much. But then we do have a request that if you are in need of a new Christmas present for somebody or for yourself, that you would go check out some of our merch online. That is a very big help for us. We could use some gas money because we're going to try to finish out and send you guys some content your way that is, you know, cool and different, man. And hopefully stuff that you like, it's going to be stuff we like for sure.
Yeah.
But the merch stuff helps us out a lot. We've got hats in the works, but I don't know how, like what stage of the works they're in because the person that's working on them hasn't hit me up this week. So I'm not sure how long they are. Out, and I can tell you that once there's a deadline, in my mind at least, then we'll put them up on the site and go ahead and kind of get a pre-order thing going on.
Yeah.
So, but we got shirts, we got hoodies, and there's a few people I think that are still waiting on some shirts. So the rut has been hard for us, but it has been very good to us, and we've learned a lot. Like we said in this podcast, the rut was a big, big learning experience for us this year. And we've said that pretty much every year. We learn lots of different things.
I tell you what, you don't stop by any means.
That's what makes it fun, man.
It does. It makes it fun. But you do get better.
Yeah.
That is something I'm noticing. Yeah. You know, like I'm not saying I'm good, but I'm a lot better than I used to be.
Yeah.
The more time you spend out there, the better you get, man. It's like, you know that feeling, you know it real good. Eric does too because he was a good baller. Still is, apparently. I hadn't seen him yet. But y'all are supposed to go play tonight, weren't you?
Yeah. 12-year-old twice last night.
Man. 12-year-olds can shoot sometimes, though. But, like, you know that feeling of, like, after you've practiced and you're like, I'm actually pretty good at this.
I didn't mess up very much.
That's right. You know, you're like, we can do this. Yeah. You know, that's kind of how I feel right now. You're like, oh, yeah, I can go kill a deer. And then I go to Oklahoma and, you know.
But
you have to just read. There are broad concepts and then there are specific concepts. The specifics are what's real tough because you have to learn the specific things to, you know, the area or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's what we get on here and talk about all the time. So hopefully we can adjust that learning curve for y'all and you don't have to learn as much in the field. Maybe you can learn some stuff from our experiences. We always like to say we're not experts. We have a lot of experience. So remember that and remember this is your element.
Live in it.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meet Eater Live, head it back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, Wild Game Recipes for the Grill, Smoker, Camp Stove, and Camp Fire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.